You're listening to the Ministry Grow Show, brought to you by Reliant Creative, the creative agency for gospel-centered ministries. Find out more at reliantcreative.org.
Welcome to the Ministry Grow Show, a podcast dedicated to helping churches and ministries grow and make more effective impacts for the kingdom of God in an ever-changing digital world. Whether you're building and growing a gospel-centered ministry or leading a church, if you want insight into the strategies, struggles, challenges, and successes of other ministry leaders, you've come to the right place. Welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Roger Parrott. He's the president of Belhaven University. Roger, thanks for being on the show.
It's a treat to be with you, and I'm really glad that you're working with those who are in marketing of ministry. I think that's a terrific focus because, boy, what a huge reach they have when they get it right, and what a mess they can make if they get it wrong. So we've learned in the marketing world.
Oh, man. Yep. Yeah, it's been a fun space. It's been really fun to work with organizations and ministries and churches and help them clarify their message and their communication. And really my passion, if anybody listens to this show knows, is around storytelling and testimony and how do we use that incredibly powerful tool that we know all humanity engages with for the sake of the gospel, for the sake of our ministries, for the sake of the brands that we're trying to build. And so I think that there's really exciting opportunities there. So yeah, it's been a fun place to fun space to work in. But enough about me. I want to talk about you. Can you tell us a little bit about Belhaven University? What you guys do, why you exist, and yeah, share some of the communications stuff for the university.
You're nice to do that. Yeah, I'm president of Belhaven University in Jackson, Mississippi, which is located in a lovely historic neighborhood right close to downtown Jackson, state capital. A lot of good resources of the city here for us. We have about 1,000 traditional students who are on this campus and live here and play 17 different sports and major in all kinds of things. And then we have a big online program as well, both undergraduate and about 15 master's degrees and 2 doctoral programs in business and in education. And you know, one of those doctoral programs is a degree in entrepreneurship, which I really think is terrific. We do it with Global Silicon Valley in a partnership with them. And a great place to really learn biblical principles from an entrepreneurship perspective, those who are going in that arena. But for our traditional program, it's coming through COVID was a tough time for traditional colleges. We did great and landed on our feet. We're the only school in Mississippi that tested everybody every week. And we've done well. But we are well known as the only Christian university in America nationally accredited in all 4 of the arts: music, theater, visual art, and dance. And so we work at the highest levels in the arts, and there are only 34 of those schools in the whole United States. So we are in a category with Juilliard and Ohio State and University of California and places like that to work in the arts at that level. And then being in Mississippi, where a lot of great writers come from, we also have a great degree in creative writing, the only Christian BFA in creative writing in the country, and film production as well. So we're big in the arts, we're big in STEM, of course, a breadth of disciplines. Football team's winning, so when the football team's winning, it's always better to be a college president. And I love it. I've been here a long time, and great people, great heart. We teach from a foundation of faith. We teach what we call our worldview curriculum as our core curriculum for all sophomores to really understand how our study of philosophy and biblical themes and literature and history, how it all meshes together and how the Christian worldview has established and maintained throughout history and stands up to the tests of life. And so we're very serious about teaching from a foundation of faith, great modeling of our faculty. And as I always remind pastors, especially, Christian higher education is the single best tool of discipleship in the church. Is there anything better? because, you know, pastor or a podcast or anybody else can try and do discipleship, and you can and do, but, you know, when they come to college, I got them captive. I got them captive for 4 years, and they got to read the book, and they've got to reflect, and they got to be able to articulate their worldview and to really deal with the big issues. And so it really is a place for grounding. And, you know, from here, our students go out and do a lot of things around the world. Oh, we also have a doctorate in business in China. It's an online degree. We team it with Tsinghua University, which is really interesting. Tsinghua is the number one rated university in China. This is the Harvard of China. And we're going to talk about opportunity leadership here in a few minutes, but really a unique opportunity that came to us out of the clear blue to develop this program in China. And we teach in Mandarin, a full doctorate in business administration, teaching Western biblical business principles in China, a communist country, from a Christian college, an evangelical Christian college. It is only the Lord could put this thing together. So, you know, we do a lot of different things and interesting things, and God's blessed us. And while we're starting to tell you, I do got to tell you and your audience two things that are unique about Bellevue. Nobody else in the country is doing this. When COVID hit and students were so down, we went into that second year, and I thought, we got to get some way to get them to look up and think about the future. We decided to give every student a free master's degree. And we're doing that for all our students, and it's been so much fun to see our students graduate, and then they get a free online master's degree, which they could take right after they graduate. They take 10, 20 years later. We don't care. And because it's online, they can take it from anywhere. And then we also put in place four or five years ago, an opportunity for our students to do a double major. And if that double major pushes them into their fifth year, they come tuition free. And nobody else has copied either of those, which I'm shocked at, because they're great ideas for higher education. I just think students today have to have a broader education. They have to have more background, and to have a double major and a free master's degree for the same price as one degree. It's a deal of the century. So we're seeing some good enrollment growth because of that.
Yeah, that's really cool. So that free master's degree, that's a digital program that's all online?
All online, yeah. It's an asynchronous online program. You can do it anywhere you want, anytime you want is what we do. Now, we got lots of those programs you can sign up for and pay for now, and they're all priced really well. But for our traditional students who come, live on campus, and graduate here, we give them the free master's.
That's pretty cool. So as you guys are seeing, are you familiar with Theos U?
Theology. I am not familiar with that one. We do a master's in biblical studies and theology we team it with Third Mill Ministry out of Orlando, and we've got about 300 students doing their master's degree in that. And the unique thing we did about that is we wanted to offer that at most seminaries offer that degree at $600 a credit hour, and we're doing it at $199 a credit hour. We want to make it affordable for people.
Mm. Yeah, Theos U would be an interesting thing to look into for you guys. And the reason I brought it up is because that free master's degree is a really interesting approach. But Theos U is seminary level training, and they're pricing it like a subscription service. So for $13 a month, you can get seminary level education and training. Now, it's dependent on, I don't know how much of how much they're doing in the testing side of things, and making sure that you're going through a set curriculum in order to come out with a quote unquote master's degree. But it's a really interesting model.
Yeah, the challenge on those is you can't get federal aid for them.
Right.
Subscription models. Where with us, you know, if somebody wanted to get our master's in theology and biblical studies at $199 a credit hour, you know, you can get federal aid, get a federal loan for that. So that's a plus. There's no perfect way to do education, but I think the models are changing, and I'm glad for, I like subscription that's coming out. The Fed's got a long way to go to catch up on how to support it.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, interesting. I'm sure you're seeing all kinds of really interesting things going on in the higher education space. Are you guys an NAIA school or NCAA school?
We're NCAA. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in NCAA Division III, which I love because Division III gives no scholarships for athletics. And so that doesn't mean our athletes don't get scholarships, but they get them for their academic ability. They get them for financial need, but not for athletics. And I love it because that means our players play because they love the sport. And if they decide one day they want to quit, they can walk off the team and that doesn't change their money. And a lot of college sports has been corrupted because of all the money. NAIA is really a scholarship-driven league, which is why we got out of the NAIA. And then you get in Division II, and, of course, Division I's out of control with the money. Right. Division III is really the purity of what college sports ought to be, and I like it. And our teams are successful, and they're packed, and, boy, we got students who want to get on them. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I played baseball in college at an NCAA school in Southern California, Vanguard University. And so familiar with all of that stuff very well.
Yeah. Our baseball team plays in the Braves, the Atlanta Braves stadium here that's in Jackson, which is nice, their minor league stadium. So we got
– okay.
First class facilities for baseball.
Yeah. Hey, that's a pretty cool location. Awesome. Well, hey, you touched on it a little bit, and offline we talked about this concept or term I think you've coined called opportunity leadership. Can you share what you mean by that term? I want to get into kind of the context. And
yeah. I wrote this book called Opportunity Leadership, Stop Planning and Start Getting Results. And the premise is that in the Christian world, we have bought into the secular world's model of long-range planning, strategic planning, however you want to name it. Everybody calls it something a little different. That's fine. But what I'm calling Christian leaders to consider is to give up what I call destination planning, long-range planning, predicting what our future's going to be, and instead trust God for opportunities to bring us into the right future. And so higher education is notorious for long range planning. We love our plans and we love big documents and all the points and the sub points and appointing the blue ribbon committee and the whole thing. And I've done all that. I did it for 20 years. And, any school who says they're going to start a long range plan like that, I can tell them what the five goals are going to be before they ever had the first meeting, because they're always the same. So we gave up long-range planning in 2003. And so for 20 years, I've been operating without a plan. And God has done so much more than ever would have happened had we had a plan. And so literally, we have no plan for Belhaven 2030, like most institutions do at this point, with five goals, and here's our objectives, and here's what we're going to become. Now, I would separate that from operational planning. I grew a great believer in operational planning. So operational planning is being a good steward of what God has already given to us. So we know we're going to play football. We know we're going to teach English. We know we're going to teach nursing. Let's plan to get the very best out of that. But we're not going to put a lot of any energy into projecting what a future may be. And there are two reasons for that. First of all, it doesn't work. So if anybody had a plan 5 years ago, you do not have a plan now because nobody had COVID in their plan. So that's kind of the softball, illustration of that, but nobody predicted it. And in the world we live today, nobody's going to be able to predict 5 years from now what it's going to look like. So to try to project a plan and assume a market's going to be stable or a market's going to be predictable or a market's not going to have a dramatic shift, we all live in a market. We've got to adjust to that. So to try to put a plan in place is usually just a series of disappointments and excuses for why our objectives didn't come about. But more importantly than that, what I'm concerned about is we are missing God's best because we get so focused on our plan. So what happens is we get our process together, our Blue Ribbon Committee, or our weekend retreat, or however we come up with it. We come up with our plan and we say, okay, here's where we're going. We're going to grow 10%. We're going to add this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. Those become our objectives. We ask God to bless it, and God probably will bless it, and on we go toward that. The challenge is we get so focused on those objectives, God's bringing opportunities. God's gentle wind is blowing us in other directions, but we don't even sense it because we're so pointed at those objectives. And when we can get freed from that planning, that's when we can begin to notice God's wind blow, to notice opportunities when they come, to be responsive to them, and to move with speed to capture those moments as God directs us, rather than trying to predict his future destination for us. So that's really the concept. And what I'm finding as I talked with a lot of significant church leaders in writing the book, and my experience, and a whole bunch of leaders since the book came out, is that this has been a pattern for so many people. The best things that happened in their ministry did not come from their plan. They came because God brought an opportunity they didn't expect to come. And when we are sensitive to those opportunities, it requires changing the culture of the organization, our outlook, our theology has to get focused right, all these kinds of things. We can talk about some of that. But all that has to happen. But when that happens, then we're ready for God's opportunities. And it's amazing how many will come.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, it's at its highest level, the theology behind that is that we don't know the future. God does. And so rather than trying to predict the future, we just trust in God, walk in alignment and abiding in him, and he's going to lead us where he wants us to go.
Well, you know, at the end of the day, either God's sovereign or he's not. And we all preach that he's sovereign. God's in everything. God's got this. God's got our future. He knows our future. But we don't act like he is. We don't lead like he is. Sometimes we lead like God threw us the keys to the car and says, drive that direction, and I'll kind of watch over you, but you got the wheel. It's really not how it works. God is sovereign over all. And, you know, because we have been living by opportunities and a real, it takes a real theology of trust to do this, but living at that level, you know, when COVID hit, I really didn't panic like most of my peers did in higher education. I knew that we could pivot and we could do these things and God would open these doors, and they did come. When recession is threatened, I'm not worried about the future. Higher education right now is under enormous pressure for a lot of change. A lot of Christian colleges, there are a number of Christian colleges in the last couple of weeks have closed. You know, I'm not worried about that because I know God has the future for that, and he will lead us to the right place. We can set our plan. We can set our direction. But what we're getting is less than God's best when we set our goals and focus on those. When we trust him for opportunities, that's when we get God's very best.
How, when you presented this idea to leadership when you first started with Bellhaven, how was it received?
Cautiously. And I encourage anybody who wants to go this direction, don't jump off the cliff. You'll get fired. It will happen. Because for organizations and Christian organizations, as well as any others, but organizations find security in a plan. So saying we have a plan, we know where we're headed. These are our objectives. These are our sub-objectives. These are our measurements of success. That makes us feel confident about the future. And if you take that away and you don't substitute it for something else, people are going to get really nervous in a hurry. So what has to substitute for that is a culture of a real trust in God, that's more than just, you know, feel-good slogans. It really is a mindset, an outlook. It's a culture of how we operate and believe and structure and our theology around it. And when you build in that and then you expect God to bring opportunities, it's remarkable what happens. You know, I was probably 8 or 9 years into doing this, and there were some mission leaders who heard about it from several parts of the world, and they wanted to come see what we were doing. And they came, spent 3 days on campus, and we got to the end of that. I'll never forget the last night of that meeting. And we were kind of sitting around the table at, you know, you've been those meetings where kind of everything's been said that ever has to be said. And it was quiet and nobody was saying much. And finally, one of the guys from South America looked at me and he said, "You really expect God to bring opportunities, don't you?" And that was a lightning moment change for me, because I'd always hoped God would bring opportunities. I think we all do. But I realized, yes, we really do expect them. And so we don't know what they're going to be. And there have been many times I've sat in my office at the beginning of an academic semester and got the school year started. And I've thought, man, we don't have anything new going on this year. I wonder what we're going to do. And by homecoming, the agenda's packed with new stuff. God keeps bringing opportunities because we expect him to. And we build accordingly. We build the right team and we build the right culture accordingly. And when you expect the God to bring opportunities, God just does things way, way beyond the best we can imagine. And, let me just give you a quick example of that. We were probably about a dozen years into doing this, and my board had bought in. Back to your original question, how do people buy in? It's slow. It's a process. You start with first adapters, and I wrote a chapter in the book about how you bring the process along, so you don't get fired, because you don't want to get fired. We'd all bought in. Everybody was comfortable. Everybody understood. We don't have a plan. Nobody was looking for a plan. I went into a board meeting one day. And I put down a piece of paper, in fact, it was several pieces of paper in front of the board, and it was titled 5-Year Plan. And in that were 72 points of action. And just some of the highlights were to grow the enrollment by 43% and to raise $21 million in new gifts and to build $31 million in new facilities and start 7 undergraduate programs, of which one was nursing, and 8 graduate programs, of which one was a doctorate in business. We went through this whole thing. And of course, they knew we didn't believe in long-range planning. So the longer-term board members were kind of figuring out where I was going. And the punchline at the end was, that is not the plan for the next 5 years. That's what we actually did the last 5 years. Now, the difference being, if 5 years before I had brought to the board that plan, we would have cut it down by about 2/3 to what we knew we could hit. So we would have said, hey, let's go for a 15, 18% growth in students. We'll be good and we'd be glad. And let's build, you know, $10 million of new gifts and build $15 million of buildings and 3 undergraduate programs and 2 graduate programs. And we would have set that goal and we would have asked God to bless it and we would have hit it. I can guarantee you we would have hit it. But we would have missed so much by not capturing opportunities rather than just doing what we defined as our plan for the future. That's the difference. Well, you know, when this book came out, I thought, you know, I need to do that experiment again and make sure it still holds. And so I did it a year ago spring, right after the book came out. And there was not one item on the entire list that was even on our radar 5 years ago. There wasn't even a topic that was on our radar 5 years before. And that's how much we'd progressed in capturing opportunities that we just get so much more that God has for us when we trust him for the future rather than us trying to define the future and then achieve a direction to get there. Mm.
So what does that look like tangibly when, like, I've had conversations, especially early in this podcast, some of the earlier episodes, this topic came up. What does it look like to balance strategy and planning with allowing the Holy Spirit to lead and guide, specifically within a ministry leader's context? What does it actually tangibly look like to not have a strategy and just say, "Okay, Lord, we're going to go and follow your lead and take advantage of the opportunities that you bring"?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It, again, they're two very different things. And again, there are a lot of consultants who don't like what I've written because it kind of cramps their style on what their billable hours are.
makes consultants irrelevant.
Long range strategic planning. And I spoke at one conference, about 1500 people there. And a guy told me afterwards, he said, I really didn't like that one bit. He said, that's how I make my money. So, you know, here again, I come back to the difference. I'm not putting energy into what the future's going to be, where we're going, anything that's new, a new initiative. I get the question all the time because people often don't know what to ask a college president. So they'll say, well, what do you expect Belhaven to be 5 or 10 years from now? And my transparent answer is, I don't know. I don't know if we'll have more students or have less, if we'll have the same programs or different programs. I don't know what it will be, but here's what I do know, is it will be greater than the best plans we could come up with around conference tables written on whiteboards, because God's going to lead it and direct it. So when it comes to new initiatives, we don't plan those. We plan incredibly well the current things that we're doing. We want to get the very most out of every single function on this campus. So every function, yes, they have an operational plan. They have a measurement standards. We look at those regularly. They go every 3 years. They go through a deep cycle of evaluation, all that kind of thing, to get the most out of what we have. But we don't have a plan that says we're going to grow this student body by 20% in the next 5 years. There's no plan for that. We are going to get the very most out of what we're doing with our enrollment process, our marketing process, all that kind of thing. But it's not set toward a specific predetermined target. And I think that's the big difference. You know, I've never seen a long-range plan, which essentially is not a list of things we wish we had that we don't have. Mm. In opportunity leadership, we're focused on rejoicing in the blessings that God has given us and getting the most out of that and not being frustrated by what we don't have. And so It really is a very different mindset, because when you're always focused on the future plan and it never measures up, it's never as good as we say it's going to be, because life doesn't work that way. So all we usually do is disappoint everybody, and we go through the cycle till everybody gets worn down, and then we do another plan. And then they get all hyped up again, and we go through the same thing again. It just doesn't work. It drains energy out of organizations when you do it that way. Living by opportunities. But, you know, when it comes more specifically to what you ask about how does that work, it means that, again, there's some real principles, and I'll end these in the book. But first of all, you know, when you're in a planning, long-range planning mode, your first reaction to everything is probably no, because you're focused on your plan. For us, it's probably yes. We're going to say yes until we have to say no. So when you talk to me about Theos U, I'm going to look that thing up, and we're going to start to say yes until we have to say no. Maybe it's something we can do work with. I don't know. But we say yes until we have to say no. You know, thinking about the future and traditional planning, it's cautious. It's analytical. Presidents, CEOs are scared to death of saying, here's what we're going to do, unless they've been able to project every problem that could possibly happen along the way, so they don't ever look bad, et cetera, et cetera. In opportunity leadership, we're going to be confident. We're going to be expected. We're going to jump into stuff. Yeah, when we don't have all the answers. Traditional planning is focused around structures, and it's our history and what we've done in the past. Opportunity leadership is focused around mission, incredibly mission driven, and our strengths, and how it actually works. I mean, before COVID, and we had more options because a lot of things were happening there in my conference room here, we probably had a dozen or so projects on the board of things we were exploring and saying yes to see how far it would go. And when we all got done, we probably had three that stuck, and that's okay. But we weren't in despair when they didn't go forward, because God's no is as good as God's yes. And if God said no on something, we ought to be as thankful as if God said yes. Now, the ones he said yes on, we kind of like a little bit more, but you know, God's no is always a really good answer. And, so we explore things until we can, we move fast. The church is way too slow. Christians tend to be way slow. Leaders tend to be way too slow. We move fast, we're aggressive, we adjust as we go along. It's all that kind of culture that gets built in that allows us to live on this opportunity plane.
Would you argue that planning for the future is a covetous endeavor?
I think it's a waste of time.
At the very least.
It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. You know, hey, let me tell you something. Here's what planning does. First of all, we set benchmarks lower than what we could do because we don't want to set a plan we can't hit. So I gave you the example of that. Second thing we do is we homogenize strengths. You can't put together a plan for a university and leave out part of the university. You know, we grew as this remarkable place in the arts. There's nobody in the Christian world working the level in the arts we're working in because we didn't have a plan. So yeah, as God opened opportunities in the plan in the arts, we could do that while our football team still had a horrible facility and our STEM programs were in high school level classrooms. Now all that's changed since then, but the arts pulled the rest of it up. So it homogenizes strength. It focuses on deficiencies. We talked about that. You know, there's this, again, most long-range plan. We always say, yeah, we're going to do SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, and you know, all this stuff. But 99% of it is focused on what we don't have. And everybody wants to throw their stuff into the pot. And that's their moment to get it in because they think that's the only way to get in. It's a lot of empty productivity, a lot of meetings, a lot of structure, a lot of going through the motions. I called the president a couple of years ago, now maybe 3 years ago, and I had an opportunity for him. It happened to be in China, and I thought he'd be a good match for it, and I tried to call him. His assistant said, no, he's tied up this week. He's in planning meetings all week. And I said, well, you know, I just want to talk to him for a few minutes. And she said, well, maybe you could call him back next week, but this week is a really important week. He's in planning meetings. I said, look, I really only need about 10 minutes, but I think it'll do your institution world a good. And she got back to me the end of the day, and she said, no, he just can't talk to you. This is time is set aside for planning. We can't do anything else. I called another president. He did the deal, and they're making $1 million a year off of it because this guy wouldn't take the call because he was too busy in planning. We miss opportunities because it's just a bunch of productivity, but it never happens. It gets anything done. And then it sets unrealistic expectations. You know, a plan idealizes what the future is. I mean, you work in the marketing space. You guys know the world doesn't work that way. You can't have this ideal, perfect future and all the charts just gently slope up and everything. It doesn't work that way. So all we can do is set this idealistic future that disappoints people. It delays decisions. It limits dialogue. And it's all about contrived numbers. I mean, you know, nobody's got a plan for 2031 or 2029. They all got a plan for 2030. And they're all going to do $1 million or $10 million or whatever it is. Why is that? We work in these contrived numbers and call that a plan. That's not a plan. That's marketing. And that's fine. I haven't got anything problem with marketing. You got to be able to communicate this stuff simply. But that is not a plan. That is just a marketing technique to share a big idea. So there's just so many deficiencies to planning. You get rid of all that stuff, and then you got time to actually invest in the people who can be creative and innovative and entrepreneurial and get the best strengths out of them. And that's what we found. And it's a joy. It's the single best decision I've ever made in all the years of leading higher education.
Mm, that's good. Well, hey, I want to take a moment to hear from today's sponsor. But when we come back, we'll continue our discussion on opportunity leadership with Roger Parrott and Belhaven University. Are you looking to grow your ministry but don't have the money and marketing knowledge to make that happen? There's good news. Google offers an advertising grant to churches and ministries that is worth $10,000 per month. This means that if your ministry is a 501c3 nonprofit, you are eligible to receive $120,000 per year in free advertising dollars. This allows you to place ads at the top of Google search results pages and drive thousands of visitors to your ministry website every month. Our sponsor, Click Nonprofit, helps your ministry acquire this Google ad grant and then manages your Google ads to ensure you get the most out of the grant. Schedule a free consultation at clicknonprofit.com to learn more about how this grant can help your specific ministry. Mention the Ministry Grove Show when you sign up to get 20% off your first 3 months of management. All right, welcome back to the Ministry Growth Show. We've been talking with Roger Parrott from Belhaven University, president of Belhaven University. You guys are doing some really innovative stuff. It sounds like things are going really well by following this operational leadership or opportunity leadership model. How do you know if an opportunity is the right opportunity?
Yeah, you know, we're at the stage where we get a lot of opportunities and stuff comes because we're thinking about it. We're aware of it. We're sensitive to it. So stuff comes. And to me, it all comes down to mission, gifting, capacity. Those are the three criteria that I use. And so I drill pretty hard in the book about defining mission at a much deeper level. I'm not talking about mission statements. That's not what it is. It's really a depth of understanding of what your core mission is. What has God equipped and engaged you to do that nobody else can do? So really this understanding of mission, and you never, ever, ever waver from mission. And if you stay with mission, it's amazing how productive we can be. Second is gifting. What are you good at? And, you know, we at Belhaven University, we're good at certain stuff, and we're not good at other stuff. And we know what we're good at, and I know what my team's good at, and I know what each of their gifts are. And so we build around those strengths and those that gifting of individuals and collectively, and then capacity. You know, there's sometimes when, you know, especially in an organization, you're just jammed up, you just can't take anymore. And other times, you know, you got space. And so when an opportunity comes, we're putting it quickly through that sieve, mission, gifting, and capacity. And if it measures up there, that's when we're going to start saying yes. We're going to say yes as long as we can until it really does hold up. So it begins with this whole theology of trust, and then this clarity about mission, gifting, and capacity. And when you get those two pieces working together, and you really trust God for those opportunities, that's when stuff comes. You know, you're asking earlier when I first introduced this, how people respond. And part of the response was, you know, I'd tell them, you know, God's sovereign and all. We all believe it. We're going to live that way. We're going to lead that way. We're not going to have a plan. And they'd all say, you know, and they pull me aside after, they go, that's really great. And that's wonderful. But if it doesn't work, what's the plan? And, you know, the plan is there is no plan. That's the plan. So, you know, I tell leaders when they're going down this path, you're going to get pulled back to planning because that's everybody's comfort zone. They're comfortable with their security blanket of planning. But, you know, I have a whole chapter in a book from a bunch of different leaders who have the most significant things of their life did not come in their ministry through their plan. It came through opportunities. And I can attest to that. You shared a little bit before we got started that's been part of your ministry as well. It's kind of remarkable. And I've had so many people since they've read the book. I had a pastor contact me a couple of days ago. He said, I just got back from sabbatical. I read your book. It's transformed my life. I want to come down and have 30 minutes to have coffee with you. I said, well, come and at least we'll have lunch. But, you know, he said, this is what we do, but we never had a framework for it before. We never had an understanding for it before. I've had others who've said, this is what I do, but I never had language before for it before. I think one of my favorite was I had a college president who called me, and he said, I stayed up all night reading your book all the way through. And he said, for the first time ever, I'm not embarrassed that I don't have a plan, because that's not how I lead. I don't want to lead with a plan. I want to trust God for opportunities. But he said, I felt embarrassed because I was supposed to have a plan. So this book is really designed to give people a freedom to let go of that and to bring their team along with it, because you can't do this as a lone ranger. People got to buy in.
What do you think? One of the things that you talked about within that framework, that mission, gifting, capacity, specifically around mission, never wavering from that mission. If you look at the trajectory of so many higher education institutions and universities, a lot of the Ivy League universities started as Christian organizations and have now significantly wavered from what they were at the beginning. I'm sure you read the book Mission Drift. I mean,
right.
Some of the greatest examples of mission drift are within the university system. And so as a university, how do you guys ensure over the long haul that, man, this is our mission. This is where we're headed. And we're not going to waver from this.
Yeah.
Because it seems to be something that has permeated even within the Christian organization, the Christian universities in the last handful of years, there's been so much mission drift. What does that kind of look like as you guys think through that?
Yeah. Well, higher education is one of the great examples of it because we've got a long history in higher education to watch it. And so Harvard, of course, was founded to train pastors, going to be theologically solid and you know, conservative, et cetera, et cetera. When they started to show some mission drift, that's when they went and started Yale because Harvard wasn't strong enough. And so Yale, because they were going to be the standard, et cetera. And of course, they're all the way the other end of the spectrum now. But nobody ever in either of those institutions got up one day and said, let's walk away from our Christian mission. That never happened. In fact, back in the 1920s, there were presidents of those institutions talking Christian type talk that we would be comfortable with in the evangelical world. It did not happen overnight. It happens through small, little increments. It happens through practical decisions. It happens through the little tiny things that we give up on because we don't want the fight. We don't want the hassle. We don't want the difficulty. So we let go of this. We let go of that. And that's where mission drift happens. It doesn't happen because some faculty member comes in and goes rogue. If that happens, it's such an aberration that can be dealt with. It happens in small, little increments. And I detail that pretty heavily in the book. And part of one of the examples I give, which everybody can understand, was Sunday activities. You know, I grew up at a time when Sunday was Sunday. And, you know, I'll never forget, we didn't get to watch the Beatles when they were on Ed Sullivan because that was on Sunday night and we were in church. And besides that, we couldn't turn on the TV on a Sunday. Well, where have we come from that day to this day where Christians are part of the NFL game day experience, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Shopping, all that we do on Sunday is pretty much, in a lot of ways, pretty typical of other days. And where did we get to that? And I detail in the book, it's a bunch of small, little, incremental changes that happen. So as a leader, I'm always looking at the small stuff. I'm always looking at the little stuff because that's where we're going to erode the edges of mission. And I talk to my campus often that I'm not a micromanager, but I'm micro-aware. I want to know what's going on. I want to know about the little stuff that's going on because the little stuff is usually where the devil will get us. If we get attacked on the big stuff from the outside, you know, we'll all put up our armor and we'll fight that. That's really not that hard. But it's the little stuff and usually from the inside where we start to lose our mission. And, you know, Harvard and Yale are the softball examples. But, boy, there are a ton of Christian colleges, and they're under pressure right now. And I'm seeing Christian colleges right now who are under so much pressure, the only way they can define their mission is define themselves politically. So they're going more conservative in a political environment in order to define their mission. Well, that's mission drift, too, to me. That's pretty significant mission drift that you're going to be driven by your political conservatism rather than by a biblical standard. And so, you know, I think presidents of whether it's universities or any entity has to always be aware of mission. That's my job one every single day on this campus is to watch mission. But it happens through little tiny things.
Mm. And so within that focus on the little things, how does this idea of opportunity leadership apply? Like, how do those two things mix? Does that question make sense?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think if you don't protect the mission, it really doesn't matter what the opportunities are. So if I just want to do stuff, I can do stuff. If it doesn't have any tie to mission, you know, I can fill the day and I can probably make more money. So, you know, we are really mission driven. I mean, that's why our people are here. That's why they sacrifice. That's why they believe in it. They want to be part of it. So we're going to hold tight to that mission, but mission gets pushed on practical levels. And, you know, I mean, I'm the only institution in the state of Mississippi, which, does not regularly schedule athletic competition on Sunday. And, you know, we've got a number of Christian institutions in this state. Now they've chosen to do that. And that's their choice. And when they all started, they all said, yeah, we're going to play Sunday afternoon. You have time to go to church, et cetera, et cetera. And then those start times get moved back. And you're a baseball player. You know, when you play baseball, you got to be at the park 2 hours ahead. Well, all of a sudden that becomes 10 o'clock instead of noon. And it, that, those are small little things, but eventually you turn around, you go, where'd the mission go? And it's watching that. Now, that doesn't mean when we've had the ox in the ditch, we haven't played on Sunday. We have. But it's a rarity for us. It's not a, an ongoing thing. So it, but trying to work through the practice of life and deal with mission, I think, is one of the high pressure points of leaders that we've always got to be watching, because we live in a real world. We can't wall ourselves off from the reality of the world. Mm.
What are some of the practical strategies or techniques that leaders can employ to cultivate an opportunity-driven mindset within your teams and organizations? You talked a lot about developing culture and opportunity leadership culture. What does that look like?
Yeah, I outline in the book six talents of opportunity leaders, that while they operate differently. Now, I encourage leaders, you're not throwing away stuff you learned at Harvard Business Review or business school. That stuff still applies. But these are talents on top of that. And one of them that kind of interesting that we haven't talked about is to emulate baseball players and baseball managers instead of football coaches. So you're a baseball guy. You played baseball in college and NCAA, so you know what that's like. But a baseball manager is very different from a football coach. Unfortunately, in the Christian world, we've kind of taken football coaches as our ideal of what leadership should be, and we emulate Tony Dungy and others, and some of that's fine. But look at the difference between those. Football is about control. It's about preciseness. It's about a time constrained. It's about team synchronization, where everybody's got to do just the right pre-planned thing at the right time. I asked my football coach one day, as they were coming out for a game, I said, how are you going to deal with them? He said, we're going to run the first 20 plays no matter what they do, because we already know what they are. And, you know, that's what football does. And football is about winning every game. If you don't win every game, you're not going to win a league, and you're sure not going to get into a national playoff in Division I. Baseball, on the other hand, rewards anticipation. It's reactionary. It's about encouraging personal ingenuity. It's about flexibility. It's about interwoven purposes of people who are very, very differently gifted. And you can lose about 30% of the time in baseball and you can still win the World Series. So I think that we have gotten so enamored with football coaches that we've taken that as a model when I'm encouraging opportunity leaders to be more like a baseball manager. And here's the other thing about the baseball football analogy. When the pressure's on, you're watching a game on TV and the pressure's on in the key moment, the camera always goes to the football coach every single time. When you're watching a baseball game and the pressure's on the key moment, the camera always goes to the player. And as leaders, we need to put the camera on the players, not on us as the leaders. The baseball manager often is on the back wall of the dugout, thinking, strategizing, encouraging, but is not out front. And it's a huge difference where the football coach is stomping the sidelines, standing out in front of the whole team. It's a different model. So six talents of opportunity leaders, and then six tendencies of opportunity leadership ministries. And, you know, the first of those is embracing speed. We are just too slow in the church, and you work in the marketing space, and you know how slow some organizations can be to make a marketing decision. Help us, the market move by the time they finally decided what photo they're going to use. And, you know, get on with the show, guys. And, you know, I've said, and I use the analogy in the book, that we have the DNA of a sloth. And, you know, a sloth is an interesting animal, because if you surprise a sloth, it couldn't jump if it had to. It just does not have the DNA for it. And the church is somewhat the same way. We have a DNA of a sloth, and it's a DNA of fear. We're scared to death of making a mistake, and that we're going to be embarrassed if we make a mistake, or we have limited resources so we can't afford to make a mistake, so we don't act because we're too slow because of our fear. We have a DNA of comfort. that, yeah, what we have isn't that great, but at least we know it and we understand it and we're comfortable with it and we can live with it. We have the DNA of intimidation. A lot of, especially Christian organizations, because we're smaller, we look at what others have and we say, well, we can't do that. So we hardly even want to try because we're intimidated. Help us. If we're smaller, it means we can move faster. We can have better customer service. We can be responsive. We can turn on a dime. You can't do that at some bigger place. And we have the DNA of assumptions. The assumptions we can't do this or we must do that. I mean, everybody before COVID assumed you couldn't have church if you didn't have people in a pew, and we proved that you could. And, you know, COVID really was a great model of what leaders can do when they don't have a plan. And part of the problem after COVID is we're all going back to the plan. But during COVID, nobody had a plan. What did everybody do? They had to move fast. They had to be innovative. They had to get rid of the assumptions. They had to try things. They didn't know if they were going to work. They had to be aggressive. They had to change after they got into it because what they started with didn't work. All those kinds of, that's what opportunity leadership is doing what you did in COVID. And look at the results we got with COVID. It was terrific. A lot of great things came out of COVID, a lot of bad things as well, obviously on the medical side. But on leadership side, a lot of good things came out of what we were forced into when our plans all of a sudden got thrown in the trash because COVID wasn't in our plan.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the marketing world. That's been one of the things that I've recognized and seen over the last decade of doing this is the church is so slow in this space. I mean, we're sometimes decades behind as far as communication and tools and innovation, how we're innovating in the space. We're just not willing to try anything new. Nobody wants to try anything new. They want to make sure that it's proven and done by somebody else. And by the time that happens, especially in this digital world, right, your platforms have changed. It's totally what worked yep, last week no longer works this week. And so if you're not able to shift and make adjustments in a world that's rapidly, rapidly changing, it's detrimental. And so that's what we're seeing within the space is it's been a struggle to get ministries to try to innovate and try new things and or try things that are just now become their standards. Like the digital right, world is the standard. You can't get away from that. And to continue to try and go back to our old way of doing things, because that's what has always worked and that's what we're used to and that's what we're comfortable with, I think it's really dangerous.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, speed wins. It doesn't always get it right, but speed overall will win. But part of our challenge in leadership is we want to think through every contingency, every problem, everything that could happen, and we don't want to implement until we can predict all those because we stand up and tell our team that this is the way to go. And I tell my team, this is where we're going, but it's not going to look like this when we get there. It's going to look different. So plan on that. We're going to implement. We're going to adjust as it goes along, and that's okay. That's part of the process. But you, again, that comes back to building that culture. But yeah, Christian organizations can be so terribly slow, and they don't understand some of even the basic things. As you know, I mean, photos are everything. And we just redid a website, and we put a lot more work into the photos than we did into the whole rest of the thing, because the photos communicate, and every single photo has to communicate. It's a shame we are letting the gospel message sit on the sideline because we're unwilling to move, we're unwilling to go, we're unwilling to make change, and to really reach out. And we can do it, but we got to get rid of this DNA that's built into the Christian world.
Mm. Yeah. How can leaders balance seizing these opportunities with managing the risks that come with that? Because like you said, when we're going fast, oftentimes it can get us moving in maybe a slightly off kilter direction. And innovation always has risk, right? Like trying new things.
Yeah.
Large percentages of those attempts fail. And so how do you manage the risk with this kind of pursuit?
You got to build a culture that understands you're going to fail.
But it's okay to fail.
Reward failure. You got to lift up failure. Look what we tried to do. Hey, this was great, but it didn't work out. And when it didn't work out, there's reasons for that. I found most often that something we tried and it didn't work, we came back to something similar to it later that we learned from the first time around. It's kind of interesting. But I wrote a whole chapter called Getting Comfortable with Risk, because if you don't get comfortable with risk, you can't move. And you've got to work through those issues. And that's a culture issue. That's got to be, you know, my setting. That's got to not just be my leadership team, but that's got to be our faculty. That's going to be our staff. I mean, this is their livelihood. They got to not be afraid when things don't work out. It's got to be our board of trustees. You know, I'm thankful for a board who understands when stuff doesn't work out, that's okay. But part of the problem we have in the church is when we start something, we say, well, God led us to this. God bless this. We're going to do this. And then when it doesn't work, we don't want to change it because God called us to us. And we just told everybody God blessed it and we don't want to change it. And so we're terrible at stopping because we don't want to stop it. That's the last thing we want to do, because then what? We didn't hear God, or God made a mistake. I mean, what's the deal? And so what we do is we start something new on top of it. And then neither one of them are very effective because we're layering too much energy into something that we should have just stopped. I got a great board. You know, we've done stuff where we put, you know, a couple hundred grand into a project and we said, hey, this isn't going to work. And we just said, stop, just pull the plug and let's put our energy someplace else. But again, every time we've done one of those, it's always paid off for good later on with something else. But you got to get comfortable with risk, and it's a process, but it's a group effort. It's not simply a leader. Otherwise, the leader looks like a risk taker putting everybody else at risk. And for a lot of folks, they can't see from the leadership role what we see in our leadership role. And all we do is make them afraid. And when they get afraid, either they're going to cower down or they're going to leave. And the good people will leave and you'll be stuck with the bad people.
Man, this has been really helpful for me. I hope it's been helpful for our audience. Roger, if people want to get a hold of you and learn more about what you're doing, maybe get a hold of a copy of your book, how can they do so?
Well, the book's easy to find online, obviously. And but I've got a previous book. It's called The Long View: Lasting Strategies for Rising Leaders. And it's a little bit more administrative, operational. How do you hire? How do you fire? How do you evaluate? Those kinds of things. And the good news is it just went out of print from David C. Cook Publishers. And so I've got the rights and I can give it away. So if somebody wants to get that book for free, you put it on your Kindle. The website is Go Belhaven. Go Belhaven with one L, BELHAVEN.com/book. And right there is the book. You can download it, that one for free, the new one you got to buy. You look, download that one for free. But I've also got a significant video series and paper on the real cost of higher education. And I think it's called The Real Cost of College from an Insider's View. And most families have to make this decision about college, and they don't even understand the questions, much less the answers for how colleges are priced and how they function and how to be able to afford college. And so I dealt with all the hard questions from do I take debt to what kind of school to go to, how to make the decision, and a lot of stewardship kinds of things that it might be helpful. I think there are five videos that are about 5 minutes each that deal with some key topics. And you can get that at the same page. And so, the book is opportunityleadership.com, and you can go there and you see the website. I think you can get a chapter of the book and see some of the things about the book.
Awesome. Well, can I pray for you as we wrap up?
I would love that. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Fathers, lift up Roger, and thank you for this time and this conversation. Thank you for his expertise and experience that he's shared with us on this show. I pray that you would bless him as the leader of Belhaven. I pray that you would bless and lead him as he leads his team, and that they would just continue to trust in you and follow your leading and guidance for the direction of the organization and the ministry, Father. We love you and thank you that we get to be a part of what you're doing, that Rogers said yes to this call to step into higher education and do it from a Christian worldview. Lord, we pray that The students that attend that school would be blessed and would come out of their experience at Bellhaven deeply in love with you, Lord. We love you. Thank you for all you do for us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Roger, thanks so much, man. It was great. Fun talking with you.
Oh, you make this easy. This has been great. How fun.
Awesome.
Real fun. Well,
you're welcome.
Great trout rides to perfect dry flies for you soon.
I'm going camping this weekend, so I'm gonna put some fries.
I'm jealous.
Hopefully. Yeah. Well, it's fun having you on the show. Thank you.
It's fun for me too. Thanks so much. God bless.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ministry Grow Show. If you enjoyed it, we'd appreciate it if you rate and or review us on the iTunes store. And make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. If you have a story to share with other ministry directors and pastors, or know someone who would be an incredible guest on the Ministry Grow Show, let us know. We love connecting with ministry executives and sharing their wisdom and insight with our audience. Just send us an email at info@reliantcreative.org. And lastly, if you need help telling your ministry story, we would love to share how we can help in that process. Check out Reliant Creative at reliantcreative.org. See you next time.